Hello everybody and welcome to the oneliner.com podcast. As a special treat for you this time, we're all gathered in one place, and that place is York. It means nothing to you as you listen, so without further ado, let's crack on. Oh, and I'm Craig, and Drew is Drew.
Hello.
And Scott is Scott.
Hello.
Before we begin tonight's podcast, I'd just like to point out that currently, a round of drinks is accounted for by Judas, top fermented blonde beer from Belgium, weighing in at a hefty 8.5% by volume. Drew, initial impressions?
I'm rather disappointed by it. It doesn't have the most pleasant flavour. Tastes quite chemically. It seems to be suffering, I feel, from having too much alcohol.
It's got a little snap in its heel at the end there. Scott, what's your impression of Judas?
It's got a bit of a kick to it, but I did expect something more from the betrayer of our Lord.
Yes.
Especially at this hallowed time.
Exactly. Especially this Easter weekend. We've had the hot cross buns, and now we too have been betrayed by Judas. Don't worry, we'll keep you up to date with our beer drinking as we go on throughout the podcast. Paul Blart Mall Cop is a comedy featuring Kevin James as the titular security man, a mild-mannered shopping centre security guard who becomes an unlikely hero when forced to save his beloved mall from a criminal gang. Intent of relieving the stores of their credit card details, the gang have not counted on Blart and his elite Segway skills throwing a spanner into the works. Having taken about $5 gazillion at the US box office, Paul Blart surely reaches these shores with some mark of quality, no? Scott?
I struggled with this, to be honest. The first 15 to 20 minutes are almost entirely unwatchable. I'm not entirely sure why. It's not a terrible film. It's not doing anything particularly badly. I just really couldn't be bothered to watch it. Once it settles down into being some sort of crazy die-hard slash stupid free-running BMX movie, it turns into something that's a bit more bearable.
It's a niche market.
Yeah, it gets a bit better. The only thing I really liked about it was the noise that the Segway makes as it hovers about like some crazy futuristic hover car.
Cool.
And it's adequate. I have no real preference. I wouldn't advise anyone going and watch it because it's not that great, to be brutally honest.
Drew, the futuristic Segway hover car noises may be enough to satiate some people's desire for such things, but does it actually work as a comedy?
It doesn't particularly. I actually didn't find the beginning completely unwatchable because within a few minutes, the main character has run over a dog in a Segway, which I hardly approve of because it's deeply amusing.
Yes, I take it the film doesn't keep up that kind of pace.
It doesn't, alas, and the first half is quite slow and isn't particularly funny. It picks up considerably in the second half, though it's still not particularly amusing. It's all right. If anybody were going to see it, I wouldn't go out of my way to dissuade them, but nor would I recommend it.
Is it worthy of having taken $5 gazillion at the US box office?
Well, no, especially because Kevin James, quite a likeable actor, even in films where he's acted alongside Adam Sandler, like I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, he's quite an avuncular man.
I seem to remember he was mostly agreeable in Hitch.
Yeah, Hitch has probably been his best performance that I've seen him in, but he just isn't, likeable's not the word in this. He's just not as engaging as he's been in previous works. And it's nothing special. It's not a terrible film, but there's not really a great deal to commend it either.
So not one to go out of your way for?
No, I suspect a lot of people could get some enjoyment out of it, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Some people get enjoyment out of rubbing cheese graters against their penis, Drew.
And you said you weren't going to mention it on air.
Shh.
I told you that in confidence.
Oh, you do it as well. Scott, do you?
No.
Oh, okay.
The fuck's wrong with a pair of you? Cheese graters on your cock. Self-taught.
I saw a programme on it once on Channel 4. No word of a lie. Judas, 3 out of 10. Drew?
I would mark it about the same. I'm rather disappointed by that.
Scott?
I'll go 3.5.
You had to be different.
I sure did.
It was a brave choice, Scott. It was a brave choice. I mean, it was a choice you made blind.
Sometimes you got to go out on a limb.
Exactly.
Sometimes you just have to have your balls dangling out there, and sometimes they get slapped.
Sometimes you get rubbed with a cheese grater. Marley and Me is based on journalist John Grogan's memoirs, charting he and wife Jennifer's move to Florida and subsequent purchase of a lovable dog, Marley. Initially designed to put Jennifer off the notion of starting a family, Marley serves no such purpose, and as the Grogans grow in number, so Marley teaches them valuable life lessons that may have been learned from numerous other sources, had they not denied Grogan the opportunity to write such a cloyingly sentimental piece of pap. Having neither read the book nor seen the film, am I correct in this statement, Drew?
I missed a statement.
Drew missed the statement because he was drinking Paulaner Hefeweissbier. It's German, as you may guess. It represents an alcoholic content of 5.5% by volume. It's yet another blonde beer on tonight's tasting list. We're just accumulating some initial impressions now. We'll update you at the end of this. But Drew, I was saying that Marley and Me is probably quite cloyingly sentimental.
It is, which is not to say that it's a bad film, but it's rather in spite of that rather than because of it. The main point of the film, though, is the dog.
Yes.
There are lots of cute puppies at the start, and then a quite entertaining dog throughout the rest of it. And the dog is the point. Humans really are secondary.
It seems to me like a particularly cheap way to rope people into liking a film. Stick a nice dog in it.
Quite possibly.
Yes.
It's certainly overlong. It's a good half hour too long. It's a 2 hour film, which is entirely unnecessary. And probably on the grounds of length, I would suggest people didn't bother seeing it. But if you like dogs, you'll probably get something out of it. Although you could probably just search for dogs and Google Images.
Yes.
Get as much out of it.
Isn't Tinternet great?
Is it better or worse than Beethoven?
Oh, it's definitely better than Beethoven.
Cool.
Not that that's much of a challenge, I mean.
Or Beethoven's third.
Oh, James. Beethoven's isn't there a
fourth.
Beethoven's fifth. Yes. Owen Wilson is as usual.
Alive as might be expected after trying to kill himself.
Typically likeable. And Jennifer France is more sort of there. And there's a nice dog in it. It's okay. It's about the best you can say for it, but it's hugely overlong and it's largely about dogs.
Yes, and it's a one-trick puppy. Fair enough. Not to obviously spoil it, we won't give away the ending, but the dog does die. Paulaner, initial impressions. It's got a nice... it's got what might in another beer be an overpoweringly fruity top note, but it settles down nicely on the palate. I'm quite liking it.
A disappointing aroma.
I'm not really interested in the aroma.
Sniff the beer, Craig.
I can't smell anything because I'm choked. I'm quite enjoying that. It's cleansed all thoughts of Judas from my mind.
Oh, it's certainly a step up in Judas. I've only had this the one time before. This isn't new to me, it's new to you. It was in freezing cold December afternoon at Christmas market in Edinburgh, after having had a fresh, hot, salty pretzel.
It's as good a time and place as any to have beer.
It seemed really appealing then, standing outside with this pint in winter.
Sorry, you needed specific conditions for beer to seem appealing.
Yes, I was broken. I was broken that day. I don't find it quite as enjoyable as I remember then, but certainly at the moment, pretty nice.
It's not bad. We'll give you final thoughts on Paulaner after these words from our sponsors. Oh, we don't have any sponsors. Casey Belden is a girl with a problem. She's recently started being haunted by demonic visions brought on by her stillborn twin brother, who was choked to death in the womb by Casey's umbilical cord. To make matters...
I'm sorry, the film's just so ridiculous, I can't not laugh.
To make matters worse, Gary Oldman needs a new car or something, and so he... and so he pops up as a curiously understanding rabbi to help Casey rid herself of such meddlesome supernatural interferences. Can he defeat these demonic shenanigans before the dog with the papier-mâché face pees on their lamppost? Writer and director David Goyer is no stranger to this dual role, having written all three Blade films and directed the third. One caveat there being that is no particular indication of the man's calibre as a director. Just what is he doing here with such a lame duck patchwork quilt of J-horror rip-off vignettes? Scott?
It's appalling. It's absolutely dreadful.
It's a film with a glory hole in it.
It is a film that wants you to be scared by the phrase Jumbi wants to be born now. That's not going to work.
No.
It is a combination of things that simply aren't scary. Pale children and some of the worst CG effects I've ever seen. Those things like that. The scary man crawling up
spider,
the stairs.
Spider crawly man. Wonder where he got that from.
What a dreadful, dreadful knockoff, nasty, simply not scary, often very boring. There's really nothing good in here at all. I suppose it's very slickly produced, I guess, but it is a slickly produced pile of shite.
Yes. Drew?
I can't really disagree with anything Scott said.
It's not one that I think anyone involved really is going to be bringing up when you mention their CV point soon.
It's terrible. It's just, I mean, of course it's not scary. It's a modern horror film and there's no such thing as a scary modern horror film.
Not an American one, at least. It went to number one at the US box office, but the prerequisite for that is to be a teen-oriented horror film, which comes out in a week with no other teen-oriented horror films, and that will pretty much get you the number one spot at the moment. It is worthy of nothing. I have never been so startlingly unaffected by any film, let alone a horror, in my entire life, I think. You've already seen the individual parts of this film in a lot of other films. I don't understand why he's even bothered to write this. It is such an obvious magpie job.
Yeah, I would like to point out a couple of things. One is that you really need have all you need to know about the film, about the focus of it, from the poster. When the poster doesn't really focus on anything scary or disturbing, it's a picture of an attractive woman in very skimpy panties.
Yes.
And that's what it's focusing
that's
on, clearly.
That's all you need to know.
And another point is, it didn't leave me unaffected, as these films tend not to, because it made me angry.
Did it?
Yes. Sheer stupidity. Just as an example, there's a scene where it's like, mirrors are evil. Okay, it's just
quite again, an original idea.
Yes, but mirrors are evil, so to stop the demon getting you through the mirror, you must smash the mirror completely, burn the PCs, and then, very specific at this, smash the mirror, burn the PCs, and bury all the PCs you've burned. Right. Okay, in the film's internal logic, you take that as a reason that you've, a thing that you've got to do to, for the reason of getting rid of demons. But then in the next scene, the mirror is on the mantelpiece with loads of bits of the mirror still in it. And that sort of thing just drives me crazy. No thought has been applied to this film at all.
One thing, not that burning a mirror would actually do much to it, apart from making it somewhat charcoal-y.
The one part that angered me, and I thought it really was a missed opportunity, was to have a scene whereby, it was in the nightclub, wasn't it? Where our heroine is locked in a toilet stall and is peering through what clearly appears to be a glory hole and doesn't get a cock in the eye. That's a missed opportunity. That was two extra stars right there if they bothered to follow through on that one.
Would it be a boring normal penis, or would it be some sort of interdimensional demon penis?
Doesn't really matter.
As long as there's some
She's
sort of penis.
She's greater or otherwise.
Yeah.
Yes. I really can't recommend this to anyone unless perhaps you're that interested in self-harm. It's not even really... but bizarrely, it's not even actively offensive, is it? It's just there.
It's not engaging enough to even be offended by it, how bad it is at most points. It's just, for large parts, but nothing's happening.
Most bizarre. Most bizarre. I have to tell you now, I'm quite enjoying that, Paul Anna. I don't think you could drink a lot of it, but it's working... perhaps erring a little on the bland side now that I've had a few, but it is an acceptable beer.
Needs a little bit more body, perhaps, but certainly very nice drinkable.
Alex Proyas is a director who has proven himself capable of inventive sci-fi in Dark City and also of ringing box office bells in iRobot. While the former was a quality piece of work that earned little money, the latter was quite the opposite, appeasing the mass market with unimaginative, overblown effects work. Budgeted somewhere between the two, Knowing is Proyas' latest film, and hopes to meld the credibility of Dark City with the bigger budget appeal of that Will Smith film, What Had the Robots in It. Scott, what roughly is Knowing all about?
You can't really say an awful lot about Knowing without getting into major spoiler territory, I guess. However, as what you're known in the trailer, Nick Cage and his son uncover a document which appears to be a random list of numerals. After applying some alcohol-ridden logic to it, it becomes a guide to the locations and numbers of deaths of certain people in certain accidents around the world. Eventually, this list runs out. And what happens when these numbers run out? Turns out, scary things are very bad things, and Nick Cage must try to prevent them. And it does certain things well. It has a lot of style to it. It has a lot of touches carried over from what's a lot more like Dark City than it is like iRobot.
Yes.
Which is a very good thing. I think it does manage to become quite creepy at places. It's at least trying to do something interesting with weaving in sort of science fiction and mythology and religion elements together, but the central premise of it is just a bit too damn silly for me to really actually actively engage with it. It's a kind of film I really wanted to like it, however it just shoots itself in the foot by having such a daft concept in the first place. And now I'm not saying that something like Dark City isn't inherently a sensible concept, because plainly it isn't, but it was just so good that it managed to transcend that, whereas Knowing keeps it's not good enough to get over that hurdle, and it keeps dragging itself back down. That's my main problem with it. Other than that, it's certainly the best thing Nick Cage has been in for years, and he gives probably a better performance.
Did you not see the remake of The Wicker Man? Oh, no, sorry.
Yes.
Bees! Oh, bees!
Bees, horrible bees.
Oh my god, bees, millions of bees. Oh no, that was another bad film with bees in it. Are you seeing me? Or is it a bee?
A really big bee.
It's alright, Drew. It can't hurt you.
It's only hallucinations of a giant bee. So, yeah, I at least mildly could recommend knowing it. It's not a terrible film. I don't feel cheated about having seen it at the same time. It just misses an opportunity to be really great by having such a daft central premise. Drew, your thoughts?
The first one is that I was really apprehensive having seen the trailer, because the trailer doesn't do it justice, actually. The trailer makes it look like it's sort of sequel of sorts to the number 23. It seems to be more about...
Which is no good thing.
No, it certainly is no good thing. Fortunately, it's not, and it's vastly superior to what I was expecting it to be. And I don't have an awful lot to add to what Scott said. It does sort of shoot itself in the foot a few times. It's just there's something of a better film in there, but it just needs some elements tweaked. The ending, for one, and... sort of the mysterious characters in the background, I suspect it could probably dispatch and be a better film for it. But it's all right. It's worth a watch. I'm in no hurry out to get it, but it's worth a watch. And if you like Nick Cage, as I do, it's nice to see him actually stretch his acting muscles even a little.
Yeah.
Rather than the phoned-in performance, for instance, in Ghost Rider.
Well, Nick Cage hasn't done anything of any note whatsoever since
Leaving Las Vegas.
Adaptation,
of course, yeah. Yes.
The man's become startlingly numb. Is this the beginning of a resurgence for him?
It's hard to say. Probably not. I mean, it's
buying some time, given how it's performed at the box office. Surely that's enough to buy you another couple of.
Well, I would hope so, because he's certainly no longer someone that can open a film. No. Which he used to be on, maybe not the actual top echelons of that, but if it was Nick Cage on a poster, you could probably guarantee that it would get at least a reasonable box office from it. That is true. So it's certainly nowhere like his top-level performances that I've seen in the past, but it's not terrible, and it's a hell of a lot better than he's done lately.
He didn't do a great deal in Next, but Next was, again, another Nick Cage film that... end up being an awful lot better than it looked like it was going to be off the daft premise. And he acted a bit better in that than he normally does. So clearly, if he lifts his performance, the film benefits for it.
Yeah.
And then you look at the rubbish like National Treasure, Book of Secrets, or Ghost Rider, where he's particularly poor in it, and the film is equally awful. And I'm quite sure there's a direct correlation between the two.
Well, the thing is, he's shown that he can do sort of ridiculous schlock, big budget fare while still making an effort in The Rock and Con Air, which were both riotously entertaining. And I can't imagine him having been so good if he hadn't invested himself in the performances in so much as he appreciated them for what they were, and he went a bit OTT.
Yeah.
Chewed the scenery a bit, but that worked. We liked that about Nicolas Cage.
If you're going to be directed by Michael Bay...
you're acting against stuff blowing up, basically, so you better take the top off your
opposite bottle. Sean Connery, then yeah, you go over the top, and it works for that sort of film because it's daft but it's deeply enjoyable.
So I hope he does something a bit more interesting, let's put it that way.
The only other thing I'll quickly say about Knowing is that it does actually have pretty jaw-dropping special effects on certain occasions. It's some very impressive effects work on the natural disaster kind of scale. There's massively impressive aircraft crash at one point, and you just that and the aftermath of it is superbly well handled.
Yeah, I particularly note too, not just the CGI effects of the plane, which is startlingly realistic, but the sound design on that, which actually that's probably the one reason why it's definitely worth seeing in a cinema rather than at home, because the sound design in that one scene alone, it's like you just can't get the same level of effect and effect that you could at home.
Cool.
Yeah, I think perhaps if you're one of these people that just likes disaster films,
yes,
then you might actually want to go and see this on that basis alone, because it does have some pretty effective disasters on it and some quite affecting disasters. So yeah, that's one of the higher points in it.
Certainly don't avoid it. Should point out that the next film perhaps provides more of an opportunity to discuss certain recent changes in the way we're watching cinema as opposed to the film itself, but we'll get on to that in due course. Monsters vs. Aliens is the latest film to hit cinemas, hoping to draw you in with its promise of being the latest and greatest exponent of the 3D resurgence. And Drew is just the man to tell you what it's all about. With a mouthful of Paulana.
But again, we shouldn't be going into his personal life in so much detail.
Get Paul out of your mouth.
You don't have to tell people that I have a mouthful of anything beginning with Paul.
Beginning and ending with Paul. Beginning with Paul, ending with the ball.
Well, if you're lucky.
Oh.
Be quiet, Paul. There's not really an awful lot to tell you about this film, because there's not a huge deal of plot. Reese Witherspoon voices Susan Murphy, who on her wedding day to your stereotypical aspiring creep local newsman is hit by a meteor which contains magical quantonium, which turns her into a 50-foot tall woman with superpowers and super strength. And the government say, "Oh, we better lock her up with all the other monsters we've locked up." And then aliens,
as you do,
aliens come and attack, and they say, "Oh, well, maybe these monsters we've locked up could be useful. Go and fight them, please." I mean, that's the plot. There is no more plot than that.
Yes, it seems to be serving more as, like I say, more as a vehicle for the 3D than for the storytelling, which is perhaps the greatest downfall I can see of this whole 3D resurgence. Is that, well, in the way that Pixar initiated the whole sort of CG revolution in the first place, they cared about story and plot and things like that, whereas everyone else jumped on the bandwagon and just seemed to be doing 3D animation for the sake of 3D animation. Now, before they've caught up with Pixar on the storytelling front, everyone's now jumping on the 3D bandwagon to be 3D.
I would add a proviso to that, though. This film's done by DreamWorks Animation, and their Shrek films, at least the first two, have been the only ones that have been able to challenge Pixar story-wise and entertainment-wise before.
Yes.
Unfortunately,
but they have produced a vast number of them, and those are the only two that have been any good, yes. Essentially. Yes.
Yeah, it's quite the one group that you would have some hope for challenging Pixar to add something else, that would be DreamWorks Animation.
I would suffice to say on the subject of the film itself that it is, again, it's another one of these ones that's just there. It didn't offend me at any point, but I did find myself losing concentration. And I could appreciate, as a tech demo, it was passable enough for the 3D, although I didn't feel it pushed it particularly, considering it seems to be sold off the back of that. But that's the first of these, the sort of the polarised glasses 3D films that I've seen. And it seemed nice enough. It obviously 3D is viable now, but, you know, it just seems to be a bit of a clothes horse for this technology at the moment, as opposed to being an interesting story.
Yeah, well, what I hope though, when the film itself is mediocre, but some of the 3D effects are nice, and certainly the 3D experience of not having the discoloured effects of the red and blue glasses means you get a nice clean picture. Yes. You can see the colours properly. That's what I mean.
The technology works. There's no doubt about that. But do we actually need it?
No. But what I'm saying is though, it adds quite a nice sense of depth. And obviously, the movie studios want to push this technology. What I'm hoping though is that the first few years of this, they're going to be ones that's largely just a showcase of technology. Mm. But if that makes it more popular, then it might actually be used more effective and in a better film.
Well, here's the thing, though. I believe Pixar are going back and retrofitting the two Toy Story films, aren't they, with 3D?
To be released before Toy Story 3 comes out.
Well, yes. That's going to be the litmus test, isn't it? Because I'm not convinced there's any point to the 3D. It doesn't add anything to anything. There's still, regardless of how good the technology is now, you're still aware of the fact that you're wearing these stupid glasses to gain a little something extra out of the picture, some depth out of the picture. I don't think it serves anything, though. When Toy Story 1 and 2 come out, well, you know, arguably the best CG films we've had, are they going to be any better because of the 3D? I don't think so. I think I would rather watch them in their original form on a regular screen than watch them in, you know, pseudo 3D, having to wear cumbersome glasses and still being aware of some sort of distortion in the picture just for the sake of it being 3D.
I don't think it's going to make it a better film. Would it have made it a worse film had it been done in 3D in the first place? Because that's a question we've got
that's
to deal with going
there
forward.
There seems to be no real point to it.
I mean, there's no point in doing a Toy Story apart from making money out of it.
Yeah.
That's quite clear. But
that's perhaps quite disappointing as well.
Does the technology make it a worse film?
Can't imagine it would.
I can't imagine that it will. And
but in the meantime, we're having to pay an extra couple of quid for the glasses every time we visit the cinema.
Yeah. I mean, once the technology gets over its annoying habit of having just poking things out of the screen at you in the first couple of minutes, you go, ho, we're in 3D.
Yeah.
Actually, I was quite happy that it didn't try and push the envelope of what it was saying and what it was saying, because I don't want that sort of annoying shit going around the face.
But at the same time, it wasn't a fantastic film, was it?
I probably liked it a little bit more than you guys. I was entertained throughout. I thought it was quite funny. I like Seth Rogen. I thought he did a very good job voicing his character.
Seth Rogen was the most agreeable element of it.
Yes, but yeah, it's not a great film. It kept me happy for a couple of hours, but it's not. I can't mount too much of a defence on it.
Technology wise, what might be interesting, although it's more just an excuse to give George Lucas yet more money, though, is that Star Wars is planned to be retrofitted to 3D, but because that was never a film in any way designed to have stuff coming out of the screen for the sake of it, That might be the one film that tells you whether it can actually add anything to an old film, and I suspect not, but we'll
see. I suspect George Lucas should just fuck off and stop selling us the same film 8 times.
Yeah, I've...
I hope no one goes to see Star Wars in 3D. I really do.
Yeah. Well, all he's done by this point is convince me that the first three Star Wars films are actually pretty shit.
Mm.
They're quite nasty. They're not that great. They're not that clever. They're not that good. And now he's released it so many times, it's completely dispelled my little nostalgia phase of playing with little toys and going, oh, Star Wars, I remember when I was watching this when I was 7. And now I just remember it as being that crap film I bought 8 times. And I'm not doing
pretty
it again.
Yes, he's basically raised all of us what would be perceived as good work in the first
George
place.
George Lucas isn't going to care though, because you have bought it 8 times and it's worked for him.
Yes.
Yep.
He's got enough money to buy himself another shot at life after he dies.
We've got to freeze him along with Walt Disney early.
Yes, pretty much. Eccentric British football legend Brian Clough was in charge of Leeds United for only 44 days, taking over in the wake of his perceived arch-rival Don Revie. While Clough's family may not be so pleased about David Peace's novel and Peter Morgan's screenplay, director Tom Hooper clearly relishes the prospect of chronicling this most interesting of transition periods for the big screen in The Damned United. Critics are once again hailing Michael Sheen's performance, but does the rest of the film live up to the hype? Drew?
In a word, yes.
Excellent news.
I was less than enthusiastic about going to see this film because I had no interest in Leeds United. I knew nothing about Leeds United, really.
They're this year's hot ticket.
Certainly nothing like about 1970s Leeds United, but Michael Sheen was enough to get me to go and see it, and I'm very, very, very glad that I did.
Cool.
Because Michael Sheen is probably the finest character actor Britain has at the moment. He's the arch impersonator, which kind of does them a disservice because it makes you think of Alistair McGowan or John Culshaw instead.
Yeah.
But he just inhabits a character so fully.
Is that the difference? He inhabits rather than imitates?
It probably is, other than the fact that he's just a good actor too, rather than just an impersonator. And it's just a very, very engaging film. And it's really a relationship drama between him and Peter Taylor and him and his team. So you don't have to like football and know anything about football to enjoy it.
Well, there's actually very little football in it, isn't there?
There is, although I suspect that might be the budget, because it's difficult to reconstitute the matches, impossible to get rights to show some of the footage, but it's not necessary in the end.
Yeah.
And
it's not a film about football.
No, it's a film about relationships, and it's excellent.
Does it have a dog in it who teaches Brian Clough all sorts of important life lessons?
It does have Timothy Spall, but he's far too good in that to be considered a dog. So.
Well, you wouldn't kick Timothy Spall in much the same way that you wouldn't kick a puppy, wouldn't you?
But I still think this is...
Scott searching for my logic there.
It's managed to be a good football film, which it's generally regarded there aren't many of.
Yes. Escape to Victory, Drew.
I've never seen it, fortunately. I've been spared that bit. I dodged that one.
You've never seen Escape to Victory?
No.
Oh,
aren't
my
I wonderful?
God, have you, Scott?
Pish.
Carry on, Drew.
Yeah, it's a good football film, of which there aren't many, although...
Haven't you seen Escape to Victory?
Along with the likes of The Miracle of Bern, which is an excellent football film, and... They're rather interesting In the Hands of the Gods, which is a good football film. But again, it's not so much about football as about the people playing football.
Yes.
And it,
footballers.
But if you don't, you could hate football and still, I'm quite sure, enjoy this film simply on the strength of the performances. And it I don't want to bang on about this point too much, but it's not about football. It's a relationship drama, really. And it's excellent. Excellent performances all round. It's dubious about quite how much of it is historically accurate. Certainly, I think the book may sway close to reality than suggested, or the film rather is a bit close to reality than the book is suggested to have been. But for any sort of dramatisation of so-called true stories, they're never that close to true life anyway, so you can pretty much discount that. And it's just an excellent film, and I just think there should be more praise for Michael Sheen, because the man, like, you think it's so easy for him to be typecast as the man who played Tony Blair, and he's not, because whenever you see him in anything, whether it's playing David Frost and Frost Nixon or Brian Clough in this, you immediately leave him as the character, never think of him as anything else.
Shamefully, I've only seen Michael Sheen in The Queen, so I can't really comment. But Scott, do you find yourself in concurrence with Drew there?
Yes, someone really needs to start giving Michael Sheen awards, lots of them and many of them. Because I get the horrible feeling that he'll get
fed up and stop acting.
Everyone, Yeah, it's unfortunate again. Because he's sort of labelled as an impressionist, he gets somewhat short shrift, I think, on his actual dramatic performances. But he's a tremendously expressive actor, and he's probably, as I say, probably the best character actor treading the boards just now. It's a superb film. It's probably going to be on a top 10 list. I can't see anything knocking that off, because it's almost the best film I've seen this year so far. It's just such an interesting time frame, because it's like pretty much every sports film that you see, especially American sports films, is always someone coming in, struggling with some characters, overcoming the odds, and eventually becoming the massive success at the end of the film, putting through their final, you know, the winning touchdown pass or whatever it is. And
yay!
Once, and this is
3 seconds on the shot clock.
What can you do? Call
it's a three-pointer.
We run that play that you came up with in practice and all that nonsense. And this is the exact British polar opposite of someone who comes in and fails spectacularly.
Yay, Britain.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film. If nothing else, it shows you how fantastic football hacking used to be in the old days. Leeds cool. United run around as a fairly dirty team, and at some points they are just like throwing right hooks in the middle of the pitch. It's like, I wish you'd get more of that in football these days. It's become a bit of a girly game. So, yeah, tremendously interesting time frame, great performances, fantastic film, loved it.
That's all there is to be said about that. Final thoughts on Paul Anna?
It's interesting, but I'm not sure I like it so much over Hogarden, which I find it's tasting very, very similar to be bothered seeking it out on a regular basis.
That's not bad.
However, very nice.
I would say perhaps a 6 out of 10.
6 or 7, something like that.
I'd go 7.
Actually, I'm being harsh, yeah. I can see a 7. It's as good as a beer can be whilst being competent and accessible. It will never be more than that, but it's a good beer. Well, guys, thanks once again for bearing us, basically. hopefully next time we will be talking about...
Some films
that you might be able to see at your local multiplex by the time we can be bothered getting around to talk about them.
If you're really lucky, it'll include a film with Vin Diesel.
Yay!
And a Richard Curtis film.
Yay!
Which is guaranteed to be an absolute mess.
That is going to be
lack of characterisation.
That's going to be a thrill-packed action fuck of a podcast.
There's at least one good film coming out, I think, maybe.
There is, what's coming up soon?
Don't Race to Witch Mountain, Dragon Ball Evolution. Are those the good films of which you speak?
Race to Witch Mountain's not supposed to be terrible.
Yeah, and Dragon Ball Evolution should be awesome.
There's also Crank High Voltage coming out shortly.
We're looking forward to Crank.
So what is the good film to which you refer, Scott?
Crank, obviously.
Crank High Voltage. Did you not see the first one?
Of course I didn't see the first one.
But we love Statham and his baldy head.
I do, actually. I probably would have seen the Crank if I'd been around at the time, but for some reason I wasn't. Perhaps I was dead.
Around at the time, yes. How old are you? 2 minutes? Listen, guys, thank you very much for entertaining our thoughts once again. We'll be back as soon as we humanly can, having watched another wedge of presumably heinously pap movies. Until then... Coming from York, I have been Craig, and Drew has been Drew.
Goodbye.
And Scott has been Scott.
Goodbye.
See y'all on the flip side.
Judas gets a bit soupy towards the bottom, incidentally.